This is Viewpoint, a public affairs presentation of KSBW-TV. Viewpoint, an examination, an inspection of local activities, events, and problems. And now, Viewpoint.
Good afternoon. I'm Ron Miller. And as you can see, our program today is going to be dealing with the Cabrillo Music Festival, which opens for two weekends running on Friday, August 18th. And our guests on our program this afternoon are two people very involved with that music festival. Carlos Chavez, who is its musical director and a well-known composer and conductor, and Robert Hughes will be performing and also is assistant Oakland Symphony director.
Well, Bob, maybe a good place to begin our discussion would be a little bit of the background of this festival. And I understand you've been with it since it began. How did it all start?
Well, it began 10 years ago. Of course, we're celebrating the anniversary this year. And when I look at it, as I was in the middle of it, I see a community that was expanding, and it just seemed to be the right ingredients gelled at the right time. In the first place, Cabrillo College moved into the community. It had a temporary office in Watsonville. Then it moved into Aptus. And there was a very enterprising restaurant that offered a concert series continually at the time. The Santa Cruz Symphony was trying to build its repertoire, and everybody put their heads together, including a lot of very civic-minded people from the community, and decided to raise a budget and try to put a music festival on the map, not only for Santa Cruz, but also to make a musical contribution to the Bay Area. And they looked around for a conductor and saw that Gerhard Samuel, the conductor of the Oakland Symphony at the time, was doing very inventive, imaginative programming, and got him as the first musical director. So that's how it all began 10 years ago.
Now, who are the people who take part? Are they from the Bay Area or from this region?
At first, it was largely Bay Area and largely Oakland Symphony. However, as it's grown, we've gone further and further away to get our players so that we have the best players possible. I'd venture to say that some of the music that we're playing now under Maestro Chavez is much more difficult than the music that we tried to attempt in those first years. The orchestra is larger. We started out using an orchestra of 35 or 40, and now we're 60, 65 up in this category, and augmented for larger works. And so now, for instance, last year's orchestra, we had a bass player come down from the Vancouver Symphony. We had people come from Santa Fe. We had throughout the western United States, we drew our people. And we even had someone come from the Atlanta Symphony, as a matter of fact. So now we have the reputation to draw musicians from all over the country.
As I look at the program, it would appear that you're having a mixture of the old masters, some contemporary works, and even some jazz. Maestro Chavez, do you select what is to be played, or how
does
that happen?
Yes, I select. I propose the programs, and then the programs are discussed with me and by some of the members of the board of directors, and I consulted with Bob. Of course, Bob has a great experience as a conductor, as a composer, and a man in the area knows. But of course, it is always the duty of the conductors to propose the programs. And of course, I could make a little change here and there, but basically it's what I propose. The idea is to hold a symphonic festival, and as you can see by the program of this year, six concerts, and not all of them are symphonic. There are two programs which are not symphonic. One is to acknowledge the existence of Oriental music. Another program is to acknowledge the existence of new developments in music. I mean electronic music. To that effect, last year we commissioned Bob Hughes to do a work that would include instrumentation with electronic instruments. And it was highly successful, magnificent work, and had a great success. It was very, very well received by the audience, I mean, widely enthusiastic. So we commissioned him again this year with the same idea of making some combinations, instrumental combinations that would include the use of electronic instruments. This time he has written a piece that includes electronic instruments and some solo playing. Not orchestra as it was last year, but some solo playing. For the rest of the program, of course, we have to include some of the traditional repertoire pieces, such as Brahms or Beethoven or Tchaikovsky, because that is magnificent music.
And then you also have the Chinese music.
Well, as I said before, we have to acknowledge the existence of the Oriental music. That's why we have devoted one whole program with arrangements that Lou Harrison has made of them, and some Chinese poetry also. And then, of course, modern works. In past seasons, I have included Berg, I have included Webern, I have included Varese, and now we are having Ives, which is the dean of the modern American composers that started the 20th century in an extraordinary way, giving to American music a new place in the world, within the world music. And of course, we have played a good deal of Stravinsky, and this time I included one part in which I put together some modern classic composers that played around with jazz, beginning by Debussy with the Cakewalk, Stravinsky with the Ragtime, a selection from Aaron Copland. Of course, he's done a good deal in that direction, but I included this Jingo because it's a sort of patriotic piece also, a jazzy piece of mine, which I think is something of a novelty, not the pieces, but put them then together. So that's the way that the programs go. And soloists, we have Marcellus also doing Brahms.
Ron, if I could add a word here, I think one of the most interesting things about the programming that Maestro Chavez does is that there's a lot of what we would call masterpieces of contemporary music, of modern music. That is, works that were experimental, say, 50 years ago that have proved themselves and have become masterpieces. And one of the interesting things is that oftentimes, many times, Maestro Chavez knew the composer. We tend to forget that when he conducts Stravinsky, he knew Stravinsky very well. He knows Copland very well. He knows so many of these composers. And I don't think he knew Mozart, although when he's on the podium, we sometimes think he did. But
Well, good. That's a great compliment, Bob.
Well, now, do you, as a composer and as a conductor, are those two roles completely separate, or when you're
No, are completely united. They are the same thing. Because music is, I mean, to set an example, painting. A painter paints a picture, a canvas, and the work is done. A musician writes a score, and the work is not done, it has to be performed. So there are two parts of the same process, two parts of the same creative process. First to write the piece, second to give life to it. So I think it is complementary.
I note that on the final day, you're conducting your own selection, and it will be its world premiere.
Oh yes, this is a world premiere. This is not an entirely new work because it was sketched out some 10 or 15 years ago. But I stopped work on that for several reasons. And the board of directors said, Chavez, wouldn't you have a new work for us? I didn't because I am heavily committed with other commissions. But I thought of this piece that was unfinished, and I thought I will finish that for the festival, and I did. This is a choral piece, a cantata on the Aeschylus Prometheus, and I have enjoyed very much working on that.
Now, you have it scheduled with Mahler's First Symphony. Would you, is there a correlation, or are they
at all? No, no correlation at all. In an orchestral program, there is a certain correlation always, in the sense that you have to either look for a certain kind of a contrast, or you have to look for a certain kind of homogeneity. So you never can tell which one of the two. But in that sense, yes, there is a corollary in between all the pieces, not just this program. There should be, that's to say, a program is a composition in itself. The program making is an art in itself, you know. You have to compose the pieces so as to obtain a certain effect. Effect, I say, I use the word effect in the good sense of it. What would be that? Again, contrast and similitude. And of course, a concert is entertainment, but it's an entertainment of high caliber. It's an edifying entertainment. That's what differentiates it from other kind of entertainments that could be more or less low. What do we want? People to be happy, people to enjoy the music, and people to enjoy each one of the music, each one of the pieces, what each one of the numbers that compose the program. If you had too much homogeneity, they would be bored. If you had too much contrast, it would be crazy.
So you try to get the middle road. Earlier you were talking about the work that Bob prepared for this with electronic music, and I understand that you have some examples of what you've done. How do you create this style of music?
You know, may I say before, of course, I am really anxious to hear what he has to say, but I may anticipate that he is approaching the problem in a very original way. Let's see what he says.
Well, one of the problems approaching is that the festival asked me to do a work, Maestro Chavez, wanting to include these newer developments in electronics, asked me if I might not be interested in using electronics in the festival, but also the festival wanted to celebrate the four people who have been with the orchestra the full 10 years. They all happen to be very good friends of mine, and they're all marvelous musicians.
He's one of the veterans.
So the problem one of the big problems was combining the electronic sounds with the playing sounds and how to regulate it. And I did the work for the electronic track. The piece is called Auras, and it lasts about a half hour. And I did the electronic tracks at Mills College, where they have the biggest electronic studio on the West Coast. And of course, the most expeditious machine right now for creating electronic music is the Moog synthesizer. I did this on a wide tape so that I could have four different electronic tracks, and they'll come out of four speakers in the four corners of the auditorium. The players will move around as they play and relate to different speakers. Each speaker has a different electronic sound coming out of it. Because we haven't put the work into rehearsal yet, I can't play you the instrumental parts, but if you'd like to hear a little bit of what the Moog synthesizer sounds like, this is the music now that will be coming out of two of the speakers and against which a clarinet player will be playing.
Well, perhaps we can take a listen. Thank you. ample to me, and yet another part of it doesn't.
Well, what may sound oriental is the fact that, generally speaking, our Western tradition, as a result largely, I think, of the Industrial Revolution, keyed our instruments to go from step to step without sliding, whereas the Oriental instruments generally have the ability to slide. And, of course, electronics, it's more natural for the pitches to slide to one another. You heard a lot of that. But that is an interesting little selection. I'll tell you why. Your audience might be interested in how that is made. A Moog synthesizer looks like a big telephone switchboard, and you actually connect one ingredient of sound to another by what they call patching, or plugging in little plugs. So you'll take a basic tone wave, combine it with other things, and make it go through all sorts of filters and echo chambers, and come out with very elaborate sounds like that. I'm very proud of that particular one, because for the technically oriented, what happens in this, and Maestro will appreciate this, is the original note, or the attack that you hear, the echo that you normally, you'd hear the echo of a note, you only hear the echo of the overtone series, of the notes that are high above it that you normally don't hear. And that's one of the interesting things. Now, the clarinet, in the score, the clarinet follows that by doing interesting little figures imitating it as soon as it's done. And he moves around the auditorium so that the sound source is continually shifting. The audience will be surrounded by sound. It'll come from behind them, it'll pass by them, and instead of having just sound coming from one source, the stage.
Do you use all of the instruments in the orchestra in addition?
No, remember, this is written for only the only four players. It happens to be one player plays viola, another clarinet and bass clarinet, another player plays cello, and a very interesting instrument called a baritone that is now extinct, but was used in Haydn's time about 200 years ago, with seven strings on the top. It's like a cello, and nine that just wiggle and vibrate sympathetically on the bottom, and then I play bassoon and contrabassoon in it. So those are the instruments that play against it.
Well, is this, as the maestro said, an original way of going about preparing this, to get back to that question?
I think that there are some, I mean, no artist works in a vacuum. Obviously, I'm inspired by many influences that I hear. On the other hand, I think that the San Francisco area has done a lot toward developing this concept of music from all sources, coming even like Fillmore West and the rock palaces where you're surrounded.
Ives
did that too in his works, didn't
at the beginning
he?
Of
a
the
very
century.
American thing too. Yeah. And the music, to my mind, is rather floating music. I like the idea of music almost like water that surrounds you and comes from behind, and instead of having a continually forward direction. You know, they call music a time art, but what they mean is that it's going forward with a thrust. It drives forward. I like the idea that this, you can correct some of that thrust and spread it out by music occurring in different patterns around you, much like water or clouds.
When will this work be performed? Is this on the same night as the jazz?
No, that's a week later. That's on Friday, August 25th, that we'll be hearing that.
And it will be, that will be its first performance?
That'll be its first performance, right.
Mm-hmm. Have you begun to work on this particular work in preparation for it as yet?
We have not yet begun rehearsals. We will begin rehearsals next week. We will begin by choral rehearsals and then instrumental rehearsals the following week.
Now, when you see a score such as, and as I understand...
This is not a score to be conducted. The solo element is preponderant, so that there is much of the initiative of each one of the players. Is it not so?
That's right. As a matter of fact, a look at the score page shows you that music is not barred. You know, normal music has bar lines or references
right.
to the conductor's downbeat. In this case, everyone has stopwatches, and everybody has a complete score of what everybody else is playing. So they either play what they're playing according to a stopwatch or according to seeing what the others are playing and spacing it against it. It's ensemble by proximity rather than precision, I'd say.
So it's really a completely different approach to
yes.
To music from what we're traditionally used to.
It is, I think, yes.
What would you...
I can't claim that I'm the initiator of it. This is something that is in avant-garde circles mm-hmm. all over the world now. These are elements of it. I pick and choose the ones that suit my taste most.
However, the idea of the four soloists is quite new. Because there has been the combination of electronic instruments with normal instruments, orchestral instruments. But this idea is four soloists. It's a sort of concertante.
Is it not a concertante? Yes, it is, certainly. Right.
Pieces of concertante.
And as a matter of fact, the title, Auras, literally, the reason for the title is that these performing musicians will be playing, and coming out of the speakers will be like an aura of light or a halo surrounds a lamp in mist. There will be these accompaniments in electronics creating an aura around the central sound that the instrument's playing live.
Now, I think probably many of our viewers are familiar with Dixieland jazz, for example, or jazz where the musicians will improvise as they go through. Now, is this type of work at all in that line, or is there a more, do they have to follow a certain
pattern? No, they have to follow a score, and it's almost entirely written. There are just a few little spots, I mean, I'm talking about 15-second stretches or something, where they are given leeway to improvise, but never total freedom. I mean, the pitches are chosen for them, but they can play them in different sequences, things of this sort.
So it wouldn't compare that way?
No, it wouldn't compare that way.
Mm-hmm. What would you compare this type of music, say, with music of the past? Is it kind of a classical type of approach to music, or a lighter approach?
It's not a light approach. I take it very seriously. However, there is a slight influence of pop culture. I think all of us who have been in the San Francisco area and have been to these multimedia things like Fillmore West can't help but be interested. As a matter of fact, I remember this. This was after Maestro Chavez conducted the Oakland Symphony about 4 years ago. And I guess they don't have a Fillmore West in Mexico City. We went over to Fillmore West. Bill Graham was still running it. And I was astounded because, you know, those huge, huge Altec Lansing speakers that are so loud. Well, Maestro walked right out. I thought you were going to break your eardrums. He walked right up, stuck his head in it, then went got under the strobe light. And the total bombardment of the senses is something that is a part of a San Franciscan approach, if not maybe a total pop culture approach. However, that aesthetic is done with techniques that are very sophisticated from a serious music standpoint.
Well, Maestro Chavez, if Bob is influenced that much by the San Francisco area, now your premier work, did much of it come from your
experiences? We are influenced by the classics because we have studied them and because we like them. And we are influenced by the music that surrounds us, no matter where it comes from, call it popular or folkloric or what. We are influenced. A composer, a creator, is nothing but a condenser. We absorb and condense, and then we do we rent out our message, and of course, influenced by all these direct elements that we absorb. So what he says in the case of this composition is true of any composition. As you remember, Johann Sebastian was all the time asking for the last piece written by Couperin from France and all the last music written by Vivaldi from Italy. So he was absorbing from and from Buxtehude in the north. So he was himself letting himself be influenced. And we are now aware that in Bach's suites, he used nothing but folk dance, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Allemand, Gigue, Gavotte, etc. The folk dances of his times, and we are not aware of how much Beethoven did. But if you remember the last movement of the violin concerto, it is nothing but the folk dance. Or the trio of the scherzo of the Seventh Symphony. It's nothing but the folk dance. And who would say that that Beethoven did the arrangements of folk music? Nobody. But he was influenced because that was in the atmosphere, in the medium in which he lived. So that is true always.
I want to add something to this, though. One of my favorite quotes comes from one of Maestro's books, I think when he was at Harvard in the chair of composition there, the Norton chair. And there is the power, beyond what you assimilate, there is then the force of will and the imagination. Because I remember you defined a masterpiece. Here we have all these masterpieces. He says it's an experiment that succeeded.
Yes.
And, of course, an experiment is something new in which will and imagination have to take place on top of the assimilation he's talking about. And it's one reason why a man like Maestro Chavez is in the position he's in, because he had this on top of the assimilative powers, the creative imagination and will.
When you sit down to compose a musical work, do you try with, do you have the idea of entertaining people?
No.
No,
I have only the idea of externate my feelings, my ideas, of bringing them out, and no purpose, not a definite purpose. One never knows what's going to happen.
Is the same true for a composer with electronics?
There is a general idea. I mean, it is the same process of going from the general to the particular. You have a general idea of what you want to do. He did have a general idea. He was writing for four soloists, that he was going to use electronic music in certain sense, that he probably even has some more definite ideas in matters of sonorities and this question of involving the audience with music and all that. That was a general idea. And from that, in the process of writing his score, he was particularizing, that's to say, going from the general to the particular. Is it not?
That's right, yeah.
I think you have a very interesting program set up. It's been interesting talking with you, and I think that our viewers probably will want to hear your work and probably would like to hear all of the material. This is performed at Cabrillo College?
In the theater.
The auditorium of Cabrillo College is a very nice auditorium, beautiful and magnificent acoustics.
I want to thank both of you for being our guests today, Maestro Carlos Chavez and Robert Hughes, who is the assistant conductor of the Oakland Symphony, and Carlos Chavez, of course, the musical director of the festival. And we'll remind you that the Cabrillo Festival begins on Friday, August 18th, and concludes on Sunday, August 27th. I'm Ron Miller. Good afternoon.
This has been Viewpoint, an examination of local problems, events, and activities. Viewpoint is a public affairs presentation of KSBW-TV. Pre-recorded, this is the Gold Coast Network.